The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Hello, Rank Squad, and welcome to Ranks FC. It's your favourite football podcast. Back for another week and another main ranking. My name is Jack Collins, and I'll be your host there. And joining me, as ever, my co-host, Mr. Dean Jones. How you doing, mate?
I'm okay, mate. Although I look a bit ridiculous right now, don't I? I'm sat here in my three-year-old son's headphones.
They're a little bit small for you.
They're bright blue, like a royal blue. And they are squeezed onto my head. I don't know where I've suddenly put my headphones today. I thought they were in my backpack. They're not there. It's a mystery. And I only discovered this 10 minutes ago. We're recording in the evening, which we don't normally do. Thanks for waiting for me today. I'm sat here in ridiculous headphones and I'm sat in the lounge because my Wi-Fi is not trustworthy today. So I'm plugged in. So, yeah, it's a real throwback, Dean, really. I'm wearing kids' headphones and I'm in plug-in internet.
The video segments from this podcast are going to look a little bit different.
I mean, people that aren't listening to the pod and just see this are like, what is this clown doing?
Well, I mean, I think they think that a lot of the time.
They think that most weeks.
Yeah, exactly. We are in an international break. Everything's fallen apart for Dean because the football has somewhat paused in many ways. So we thought we'd take the brief opportunity to look forward towards the end of the season and talk about some of the most exciting races in different ends of the table, different ways that are still to come. So it's a little bit different today. We're going to split it into two parts. And then, of course, we've got a bit of guru wisdom at the end, helping more people find new clubs. It's all very exciting. But we're going to start with the big one, DJ, and you're going to start us off at the very top of the Premier League.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we would normally talk about things we love, and I'm still going to be doing that right now because the thing I love and the motivation I have with club football to get through this international break is that in a Premier League sense, we're going to come back with a bang because on Sunday, the 31st of March, we've got one of the title deciders. It's Manchester City against Arsenal, one of the biggest games of the season. And it's a perfect setting, really, for what we're going to do across this episode, which is to set the scene for the incredible games that we've got to come between now and the end of the season. Like, this is proper Hollywood stuff that we're about to run into. Like, this is, from a Premier League perspective, potentially the best title race we've ever seen. This could go down to the final day. That's how good this could be, and that's how good these three teams are as well. No one has any idea who's going to win the league, and that is brilliant right now. Let's just set the scene, though, because Arsenal are top. But I think they also have the toughest run-in, and this is what makes it even more intriguing. I just talked there about the game that we've got coming back when they go to the Etihad. They've also got Aston Villa at home to play. They've got Tottenham away. And they've got Man United away too. And Chelsea home has to be rearranged to be played as well because that match was postponed and they've still got to get it into the schedule. So, look, Arsenal have shown a really good blend of blowing teams out of the water and also digging in to win this season. And I'm not going to hide from the fact earlier in the season, I was judging them very harshly, right? They had a lot of close margin wins and I found it quite unconvincing, to be honest. I wondered if those results would start to tilt the other way. They haven't, so fair play to them.
They've tilted further in Arsenal's favour, in fact.
Yeah, absolutely. They've pushed it the other way and that has been good. But They do also, amid all of this, have the Champions League to still contend with. And Bayern Munich in the Champions League quarterfinal is quite the strain, emotionally and physically. And I have to say, I'm not done with worrying about Arsenal and questioning them, because I think there could be an emotional toll here. I really do feel that strain that you feel in Arsenal games, and I think it comes from Arteta and the way he is actually in himself, in the dressing room, on the touchline. He's quite full of angst, isn't he, at times, Mikel Arteta? And it's passion.
It's full of emotion. Yeah, that's it.
It's passion. It's so hungry to do well. This is a guy that, you know, he does want to be the new Pep Guardiola. He does. And the problem with that at this stage with Arteta is I'm always a little bit concerned that he's going to blow up. And with those five massive matches that I mentioned, there's going to be a lot of emotion attached. There's going to be some really fine margin moments. There's going to be some heated moments. And it's a big test for him, right? So, look, Arsenal, absolutely brilliant. I'm very, very impressed that at this stage of the season, Arsenal are leading the Premier League title race. It's quite incredible, to be honest, when you consider the way that Man City and Liverpool have played in themselves. It's not as if either of them have had massive drop-offs this season.
No.
I know you could say that Man City perhaps haven't been themselves all season, but they're still right there. First of all, we'll talk about Liverpool, who are second and on the same points as Arsenal, 64. They just played that fun 1-1 draw with Man City. But they've still got some tough tests ahead too. Away visits to Everton, Aston Villa, and a rematch with Manchester United. See if they can get revenge for what happened the other day in the FA Cup. And Tottenham do go to Anfield as well. I saw this in the Liverpool Echo today. They actually ran a simulation of the title run-in where they put the games in. And Arsenal managed to pick up the same amount of points, but it's their superior goal difference that actually was the difference in the end. It pipped Liverpool to the title in the simulation that they ran. And we shouldn't forget that glut of goals that Arsenal have got recently, how important that could be. But in third place and 1 point behind these two, we have the champions from 2023 and the champions of 2022. And the champions of 2021. It's Pep Guardiola's Manchester City, and they are an extraordinary football team. Their toughest games to come are Arsenal at home, Aston Villa at home, and Spurs away. It's not too bad, is it, really? That's not too bad from a Manchester City perspective.
You want the double at home. I think that's the key element, isn't it? You want those two of your three big games to be at home.
Big games, absolutely. And I'm not going to shy away from the fact, Jack, that our very own Fulham could be kingmakers this season, because we play Liverpool at home and we play Manchester City at home. And I tell you what, I fancy us to get something from one of those teams. If we could pull off one of our better performances, we have shown on various occasions this season that we can put in very high-level performances. We've just dominated Tottenham at the weekend. And I know that they're not quite in this bracket at the moment, but you look at the matches we've had against Liverpool this season. We've beaten Arsenal at home. It would not surprise me. I'm not saying we'll beat either of these teams, but it would not surprise me if Fulham just managed to play their part and actually get a draw against one of these two that just... At 1 point is massive in this stage, isn't it? Like, it really could take it right down to the wire. And that's what I'll end this part with, is that this really could go down to the wire. On the final day, Man City play West Ham at home. Arsenal host Everton. Liverpool are home to Wolves. All three at home on the final day. So the likelihood is we're seeing the team win the title, lift the trophy in front of their own fans in... Wow, an astonishing manner is what I'm imagining, mate. I think this is going to be superb.
Where's that helicopter going to be? That's the question. It's going to be like hanging.
Do you remember those days that we haven't had that for a while, you know, like properly?
It hasn't really. And it's interesting, isn't it? And especially if two of those teams end up on the same points on the final day and we end up with a shootout here. You know, imagine the scenes of it being like, right, it's not just enough to win. You have to go and dominate. And the last time I can remember that happening is the Chelsea one, right, where they needed to win by a certain margin and make sure, and they won, what, was it 8-0 against Wigan?
8-0, 8-1, I've forgotten about that, but yeah.
And it was a bit like, oh, it's not, you know, a win probably be enough, but, you know, just to make sure, you need to make sure you outscores. That's the kind of thing we're talking about here, right? These are the margins that could come into play, and that's exciting. I agree with you about Fulham for what it's worth. This isn't about Fulham, so I'm not going to make it.
No,
but I think there is that element of Christian Cole kingmakers, or, you know, Jamie Lannister kingslayers here in terms of being able to take points off them. And I do think that the kind of weirdness of Fulham in a particular place, and the weirdness of being like inconsistent and suddenly looking like world beaters and then suddenly looking like a team that can't beat Burnley, is exactly what makes this so unpredictable. And I think there's a few other teams like that at the moment. I just don't think anyone's doing it as sort of weirdly inconsistently as Fulham are. I think Bournemouth are the kind of team that could have a say. You know, these are the games you're thinking about. And, you know, we look back to that City Bournemouth game a couple of weeks ago, and that was very uncomfortable from a City perspective in terms of winning the title. I think that this is brilliant in so many ways, because we haven't had a title race, as you say, this close in a while between more than two teams. And I think what that provides is this kind of element that if one of these teams was to fall off, then, you know, it's still going to have the distance, it's still going to have the legs, because of the fact that this is a three-way battle. It makes it incredibly exciting, and it kind of sets us up for the perfect end to this Premier League season, I think.
It does, mate. And do you know what? It doesn't end there, because it just dawned on me last night when I was like thinking about like the ramifications of this season and where we're sitting right now. And I was like, who do I think will win the league? Like, what is, and I still think, I've said this for a while, I'm still going to stick with Man City, right? So if Man City do win the league, right? And Liverpool have already won the Carabao Cup. What if Man United win the FA Cup? And imagine if, like, Real Madrid are the ones that win the Champions League and Leverkusen are the ones that end up winning the Europa League. Suddenly, you're looking at a situation at the end of the season whereby Arsenal have won nothing. Liverpool have only won the Carabao Cup and will begin to look at it again like the tin pot in which it was regarded a few years ago by the big clubs. And yet Man United would have their hands on the FA Cup. Obviously, this is hypothetical right now.
There's a lot of if work doing a lot of heavy lifting here.
But it's not that far stretch. The Man United bit is probably the most far stretch. And in that sense, it doesn't really affect things too much, because it would still mean that Arsenal haven't won anything, and it would still mean that Liverpool, well, they could still win Europa, I'll give them that. How would it be viewed if Arsenal do come up short on both fronts? The frustration of that would run deep. And I don't know how you quite put it into perspective. It's all about building. They've still built on what they did last season, but it would basically mean that next season they have to do it, because that's the only further step they could take.
Yeah, I mean, I said this at the end of last year, right, that it's important, I think, to distinguish between disappointment and failure. Those two things are not the same by any stretch of the imagination. Arsenal could be, you know, considered that it was a disappointment that they didn't win the title from the position they were in. To call it a failure, I thought, was disingenuous, right? I think I was unfair on where we were before the season and even where we were sort of midway through it. So I think that it will be hard to kind of categorize it. Look, people, especially on social media and rival fans, will always be quick to jump on these kind of things, right? But I think wherever this ends up, I mean, barring complete collapse from here on in, which I can't see happening, this is a successful season for Liverpool and Arsenal already. Now, I said I thought they'd be closer points-wise to City at the end of this season than they were last year. And people were like, wow, that's a big statement. I was like, I don't think it is. I think that we thought that Liverpool were maybe 1 year out in terms of having one more title challenge in them. And major credit to Jurgen Klopp for turning that around so quickly and getting this team into a position to challenge. So I think you have to kind of look at it back with the eyes of foresight rather than hindsight. It's one thing to be like, oh, Liverpool were on for four trophies in March.
Mm.
And then, you know, to come up with one or two maybe looks slightly disappointing. I think if at the start of the season you'd offered Liverpool two trophies, it would have bitten your hand off for them. So I think under those lights and that context, then you have to kind of examine it. But yeah, of course people are going to jump on it on social media. We're trying not to be too reactive, right? And that's part of doing this. Of course people on social media are going to absolutely hammer this through the roof, but that doesn't necessarily make it right.
Mm. Yeah, no, it's just something that came to mind. And I thought I'm going to throw this in at the end here because we're talking about big endings and how dramatic the end of this season is going to be. And I really don't think we can underplay the pressure that these teams and these managers and these players are going to come under in the final couple of months of this season. Every single point, every single kick matters. Oh, it's going to be belting, mate.
You're very excited. You can see the face, the burn up of it. But I think it's an incredibly cool place for the Premier League to be. You add to that the kind of drama and narrative of, as you said earlier, the whole Pep versus Arteta, master versus apprentice narrative that's going on. You add to that the whole Klopp last season narrative that's going on. It kind of has a bit of everything. And it's going to be very, very exciting to see how this one pans out. We'll leave part one there. In part two, we're going to be discussing a couple of bits from the rest of Europe and beyond. Stick with us.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Welcome back to Ranks FC. You know what this means. You're hearing my voice. That means we're getting some Jack Collins rankings. Regular thing now, mate, isn't it? You know, it's probably just coming off the top of your head now, aren't they? Or have you actually made some notes?
Made some notes today because there's a lot to unpack here.
You've got a lot to get through, I think, mate, because if we're ranking five different things, I've done one now. I've got one at the end to come. I'm leaving you with three big rankings in between.
Well, I'm going to start with, I think that the Premier League's title race is probably on paper the most exciting thing going on in Europe's big five leagues, right? So I think that that feels like a fair place for it to be at number one. But at number two, I think we need to talk about the battles for the Champions League. And I found it impossible to split them. So I wanted to talk about Italy and Spain and Germany in one kind of big go here. And I think we can start in Italy because in Serie A, we have this kind of wild thing going on where, you know, Juventus were challenging Inter for the title until, you know, January, and then they lost and they've had a dreadful spell of form. They've won one of their last eight. They've really fallen off. Milan have leapfrogged them into second. Juve are third. Now, they're 5 points clear of Bologna in fourth, and they're 8 points clear of Roma in fifth. There's 3 points between Bologna and Roma. And then in sixth is Atalanta, who are 4 points behind Roma with 47 points, but they have a game in hand. But I was looking at this and thinking, wow, are Juve safe? 8 points feels like a lot. And there is also the chance that fifth spot is enough in Italy, depending on how the teams do in the rest of the Champions League, Europa League, Conference League, all of the above. Are Juve safe? And my takeaway is that Juve's schedule is absolutely brutal from here on in. So next they have Lazio away. Lazio under new management, won obviously at the weekend. Then they have Lazio again, doubleheader, because they have them in the first leg of the Coppa Italia. They have Fiorentina at home, which is one of those games that one matters a lot to Fiorentina. So it's always one of those where they will kind of turn up the pace. And Fiorentina have been up and down this season, which is why they're sort of out of this conversation. But they still have the capacity to hurt teams, I think. They have Torino away in the Turin derby, Cagliari away, who are scrapping for their lives. Now, I'm not going to suggest that that's necessarily a difficult game for them, but Cagliari are down there right in the relegation scrap. And there is that kind of overwhelming sentiment that that's going to kind of hang on. And they're right in the middle of it. And we'll talk about the relegation battle later. Then they have Lazio in the second leg away in that Coppa tie. They have Milan at home, Roma away, bottom side Salernitana at home, fine. Bologna away, and then Monza at home, who obviously did the double over Juventus last season. That is an absolutely brutal way to end the season for a Juve side who are playing abysmally and who are really, really struggling. And I think you get to that point, you're thinking, they should have enough here. They should have enough to remain 8 points clear of Roma or Atalanta, whoever come up into that in that kind of final challenger spot. But actually, when you start to look at that and then you pair that with the way that Juve are playing, I don't feel like they're safe at all. And I think they will, in all likelihood, get there. But I think that this might end up being quite uncomfortable for Juve fans towards the end of the season. And Allegri seems to have, you know, run his course in terms of being able to squeeze the juice out of any of the attacking capability of this side. They feel stunted, I think, in an attacking sense. And all of that kind of like levels up into what we've got here. So Bologna's running is probably the softest. Now, bear in mind, they don't have any other competitions to worry about. But five of their remaining nine games are against bottom half teams. Roma will have to contend with the extra Thursday nights. They have Milan in the Europa League, and they have really tough runners April turns to May. They have Bologna, Napoli, Juve, and Atalanta in a row. And Atalanta have their game in hand against Fiorentina, who, as I say, remain a wild card themselves. Their schedule is probably somewhere between Bologna's and Roma's. The tough games are a bit more spread out, although they obviously have Liverpool in the Europa League quarterfinals again, which feels like a massive task. But just a couple of games to kind of pick you into this. And look, seventh is Napoli right now. I don't think Napoli have enough in the tank to push into this conversation quite the same. But they face Atalanta in that first weekend back after the international break. On the 7th of April, Roma play Lazio. On the 21st of April, Roma play Bologna. On the 28th of April, we have Juve versus Milan and Napoli versus Roma. On the 5th of May, Roma v Juventus feels massive. And then on the 12th of May, Atalanta play Roma, Napoli play Bologna. And on the 19th, the penultimate week of the season, Bologna play Juve, which could determine in which order those two teams finish. I just think it's a wonderful space to be here. There's a load of these teams playing against each other. And it just feels like all the ingredients are there. Now, look, Roma have had a relatively soft schedule since Daniele De Rossi took over domestically. But I've been impressed with them throughout this period of since he took over from Jose Mourinho. Atalanta feel like they're really coming into the second half of this season and growing into it, which is why they've been pegged as sort of Europa League outsiders. And Bologna just keep ticking. And I think that with all of that becoming exciting, and then underneath that, you have Napoli and Fiorentina, who are, you know, probably too far outside it to challenge for these Champions League places, but will definitely still have a say in how they fall out. It's all just got very tight and much too tight, I would imagine, if you're a Juve fan, for your liking.
Yeah, look, if we were to rank the biggest letdowns of the season, Juve might be in there at number one. I really thought that they were going to give Inter at least a run for their money.
They did for 6 months, although it was all 1-0 wins.
Where's it gone? Where's it gone to have fallen away this far? It's just appalling, really. And I'm hugely disappointed in them for not being able to at least maintain it up to now. You know, you don't have to actually beat Inter as the title because they are the best team in this league. But I'm shocked at how badly... I don't know what their actual style of play is, to be honest with you. And I think that that's probably the scariest thing. But this is a team, yeah, that should have been in one or two this season. And you're talking about them not making fourth spot. And
yeah, I still think it's likely that they do, just so we're clear. So I'm not getting absolutely annihilated.
I don't, to be honest. I think you're right. Like that Roma Juve game, you're right. That will be a massive game because by then, Roma probably have made up a bit more ground on them. Might be that the gap's closed to 3-4 points at that point if Roma were to win it. I'm not saying they will because perhaps they could be as bad as each other at times, but a massive fixture. And I think it should be considered embarrassing if Bologna do finish above them in third.
Yeah, like, as good as Bologna have been.
As good as Bologna are, this is no detriment on them. Like, that is unacceptable for Juventus. And Allegri cannot stay beyond this season because I can't even imagine what it's like to be at every Juve game. What the atmosphere really feels like. What it's like to go and watch week after week. It's like, I guess in England, it's comparable to what Man United fans have been through for a while, where you're just kind of going through the same thing. But yeah, it's hugely disappointing, but it's an interesting race. And the order of it too, does matter, you know, it does matter where you finish in terms of the Champions League order. So some twists and turns still to come there, and all eyes on Juve, because if they do fall away, mate, then it's a complete catastrophe in my eyes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think it's easy to say, but actually it would end up being, you know, the catastrophe of all of these. I'm going to take us to Spain. Mm-hmm. I think about 2 weeks ago, I would have still had Barcelona in this conversation, but since they've leapfrogged Girona and got to sort of 64 points in second, and considering the way that they just seem to have found a little bit of form, now I don't think they're perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but I think they will have enough to guarantee themselves a Champions League spot next year. So I'm going to kind of exclude them from this race, but Spain are not one of the sides that we're expecting to get an extra spot in the Champions League, depending on how the things are battled out. It looks like it's likely to be two of Germany, England, and Italy. They're locked down those spots based on historical performance, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So third, fourth, fifth really matters, right? And right now, Girona in third with 62 points. Athletic Club are fourth on 56, and Atletico Madrid fifth on 55 points. And Atleti sort of, you know, bouncing through against Inter and putting that really big display on, only to fall completely flat on their face against Barcelona at the weekend. I think is maybe, you know, the fact that that big win over one of the two, I would suggest, Champions League favourites, has potentially papered over the cracks a little bit, that this Atleti side have had four or five dreadful results in recent weeks, mostly away from home, but then obviously the Barcelona one is at the Wanda, and suddenly it goes, there you go, your home form's absolutely out the window. So we have a couple of big ones. Real Madrid play Athletic Club first weekend back after the international break. Atleti play Girona on the 13th of April. And then 2 weeks later, they play Athletic. Both of those games are at the Wanda. And I think that that feels like a massive thing. And look, Athletic have the same thing because San Mamés has been a fortress this season. They've been sensational at home. They've been good away, but they've been sensational at home. The last time they lost at San Mamés was back in August to Real Madrid. That's how good they've been at home. That's the one loss at home all season in the league. And then on the 5th of May, Girona played Barcelona. Obviously, they won the away game and the away fixture of that. And it was one of those which really sent Barcelona like further and further into the spiral. Things have turned around since then. And Girona has started to fall away a little bit. And we've started to see maybe that worry about squad depth, maybe that worry about teams working them out tactically, all of it a little bit more. So Girona have the buffer, the 6-point buffer to Athletic and the 7-point buffer to Atleti. You don't know how hard it is to keep getting these in the right order. I'll tell you that for free. But is that going to be enough as we get towards the end of this season, as fatigue kicks in? Yes, they don't have quite as much going on in terms of other competitions, and that's fine. We'd say same for Athletic, although they obviously have the Copa del Rey final against Mallorca. But I feel like Valverde is going to grind the engine with Athletic and they'll get there. I think whatever happens here, I fancy Athletic to get themselves a Champions League spot. The question is going to be, is that fourth spot if Girona can re-pick up the form, or is it fifth, you know, or is it third and Atleti squeezing in fourth if Girona fall away here? 7 points feels like a lot, but actually when you're not cooking and Girona have a couple of really difficult games, obviously say away at the Wanda against Atletico and then at home against Barcelona in this kind of form, that's 6 points that could to go straight away, right? And so it's really easy to look at it and be like, oh, that buff will be enough. I worry for them that actually they're going to fall just short. And maybe, you know, in some ways, maybe that's a good thing. Girona being able to compete in the Europa League next year and actually compete as opposed to struggling potentially in the Champions League wouldn't be the worst thing in the world, I think, to get into European competition at all. And they definitely will do that, would be a massive achievement. But considering one point we were talking about a title race here, it would feel like a disappointment, I think, from where they were. Not as we say, not a failure, just a disappointment.
No. Yeah, it's very different. But here's an interesting twist, mate. I am on a stag do at the end of April in Madrid on the weekend that Atletico Madrid play against Athletic Club at the Wanda. And I only just realized today that I'm expected to fly home on that Sunday. Now, interestingly, I haven't actually booked a flight home yet. I've booked the flight out. I haven't booked the flight home on the Sunday as everyone else has. And I might fly home on the Monday and go to that game.
I think it would be worthwhile.
I don't know how I get a ticket. I don't know how much a ticket would be expected to cost, but I'm certainly going to look into it. Because that's going to be a belter.
If it makes you feel any better, we could really deliver from live games that weekend, because that's the week I'm at Napoli-Roma.
Oh, is it? Oh, mate. If I knew how to produce a podcast, we could do something.
Yeah, well, we'll see how we can go. But yeah.
I'll have to use my voice notes. But
we'll make it work.
But yeah, that is a big old weekend.
Yeah, definitely. I just think it's going to get tighter in Spain. Whether it's tight enough to change, I don't know. But it's definitely going to get tighter in there, would be my takeaway from it. And the last one, I suppose, is Germany, because second is Bayern currently with 60. Stuttgart in third with 56. Dortmund fourth with 50. And Leipzig fifth with 49. Now, again, fifth might be enough, but I don't think you want to be relying on that as a concept, especially with Italy and England in that competition, both having a lot of teams in these next rounds and being able to, you know, to push forwards as well. So it does feel like a big one. And at first, I was just going to do this as kind of Borussia Dortmund against RB Leipzig, you know, 1 point apart. And then I was thinking, well, Stuttgart are six ahead. And that if I'm putting Girona into the bracket, then I probably need to put Stuttgart into there as well. And Bayern with 60, probably safe. And considering they have just started to refine a little bit of the rhythm again, I think they'll be fine. But I just kind of wanted to tap it out in that regard. But it does feel like here, Dortmund, Leipzig, 1 point apart, obviously completely opposed from a kind of social and political perspective in terms of what these two clubs stand for and what they believe in. And they play each other in Leipzig on that same weekend, 27th of April. It's just an unbelievable weekend.
Blimey, we should rank that weekend.
Yeah, exactly. We could have just done that. But it does feel, there's a couple of games. Bayern played Dortmund, first game back after the international break. Dortmund play Stuttgart the week after that, and then they play Leipzig the end of April. So three massive games in the space of 4 weeks for Borussia Dortmund, and then Stuttgart play against Bayern the week after that. So it does feel like there's a space. Leipzig have the softest run-in in this regard, in terms of not playing the teams around them, although there are some really tricky ones against the teams just below. But it does feel like there's some big moments here for Borussia Dortmund, who have a huge month, you know, end of March to the end of April, is going to determine how this Borussia Dortmund season pans out. And you add to that in the middle of all of this, they will have two legs against Atletico in the Champions League as well. It is just an absolutely crucial month for everybody of a yellow and black persuasion.
It is, yeah. I mean, fair play to Stuttgart for sitting where they do right now. They've got a hell of a run in. They've got Dortmund away. They've got Frankfurt at home. They've got Leverkusen away. They've got Bayern Munich at home. That's a test. That's a test. And if anyone's going to fall away, I just wonder if it might be them. If they can't stand the pressure of all of that and that they end up getting caught. I don't really want to see it, but I got a feeling it might happen.
I just think the way that I've been looking at it and thinking for a couple of weeks, you know, obviously they played Leverkusen in that cup game that felt massive for Stuttgart's season. And since then, I was like, oh, I wonder if they fall away a little bit in the league, you know, the emotional toil of, you know, running Leverkusen so close and then falling away in the quarterfinals in a cup competition that if they'd got through there, they would have expected to win. But they've won 5 of 6 since then and drawn the other one. They've really kept pace really nicely. And there's been some tough tests in there as well. You know, they went away to Wolfsburg and won 3-2 in pretty dramatic circumstances. They beat Freiburg, who are up there in the conversation as well. They battered Leipzig before that quarterfinal at home. They won 5-2. They've been able to keep pace. And I wonder just the fact that actually they're playing week to week rather than squishing in midweek games as well, will have enough to keep them fresh for this final run-in. And yes, they might lose those games to Dortmund. They might lose that game to Bayern. They might lose that game. They probably will lose that game to Leverkusen. But actually the way that it's all panned out, I think they'll get enough from the rest of these five games. I think they will win at least five of their last eight.
Yeah,
should be enough to propel them into the Champions League. And then they deserve it because they've been so consistent over the course of this year.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. And I do actually hope they do it.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, we'll leave the races for the Champions League there because I could go on all day about these kind of things. And we're going to go to the bottom instead. And I am going to go back to Italy because I think the Serie A relegation scrap is one of the best things that's going on this season, right? There's only 5 points between Lecce in 13th and Sassuolo in 19th. Salernitana are bottom of the league. They're gone. But it's two from seven for those last two spaces. And to be honest, it was even tighter before the weekend when Lecce decided they were going to be the only one at the bottom seven to actually pick up any points. So Lecce currently 13th with 28 points. Udinese in 14th with 27. Verona in 15th with 26. Cagliari in 16th with 26 points. Empoli in 17th with 25 points. Frosinone in 18th in the first actual relegation spot right now with 24. And Sassuolo with 23 points. So Easter Monday, we have Cagliari versus Verona and Sassuolo versus Udinese. 21st of April, Sassuolo Lecce, Verona Udinese. 5th of May, Cagliari Lecce, Empoli Frosinone. 19th of May, Sassuolo Cagliari and Udinese Empoli. And then on the final day, 26th of May, Frosinone play Udinese. Now, Ranieri's Cagliari are in the best nick all of a sudden, right? They were in danger of being cast adrift, but they're up to 17th after picking up 8 points from their last five games. 1-2, drawn 2, lost only 1. Just to kind of give you a rundown of these sides, Empoli can defend, but they can't score. They have the worst goal score record in the division, and they are the side who have finished the most games without scoring a single goal in the top five European leagues. 16 games they have played that they haven't scored a single goal in. On the other side of that, Frosinone can score, but they can't defend. Nobody's conceded more than their 60 across the course of this season. They're conceding over 2 goals a game on average throughout the entire season. Udinese have been okay on the road, but they've managed just 1 win in 15 games on home turf. But Cagliari, Lecce and Frosinone really struggle away from home. And in the midst of all of this are Sassuolo, who make no sense. They're the only team to have beaten Inter this season. They also beat Juventus and Fiorentina, both in that European mix. But Sass are just all of a sudden really quite bad. And their schedule has some big opportunities. They play 4 of the bottom 8 in their 9 games remaining. But given that they've actually struggled in those games, I can't tell you if that's a good or a bad thing. They have the opportunity. It's in their own hands to drag themselves out. But like, these are not the games that they've been winning. Lecce are top of this little pile. They've got a bit of a cushion, but they're in a weird place themselves because they were forced to fire their coach a week or so ago. You might have seen this after he went on the pitch and headbutted Verona striker Thomas Henry following a bad-tempered 1-0 loss. He apologised. The club released a statement, but in all reality,
you can't just apologise when you've headbutted
the
someone on the football
was
pitch.
Completely untenable, right? So they won at the weekend against Salernitana, but it was hardly convincing. Frosinone might have the softest schedule left. They only played 2 of the big guns, and one of those is struggling Napoli. But unless they can tighten up at the back, it's not going to matter. Empoli's schedule is tough. They have Inter, Napoli, Atalanta, Lazio and Roma all to come in their final 9 games. Cagliari's final 9 is similar. Juve, Inter, Milan, Fiorentina and Atalanta all looking pretty ominous. Well, Juventus slightly less so, as we've discussed. But it's mad. This is mad. This is as tight as I can imagine it being at this point. And I know that there are spaces and in particular, the Zweite Bundesliga in Germany having a bit of a madness on its own in terms of relegation battles. But in terms of a top five league, this is, almost unheard of.
Yeah, I mean, it is extremely tight. And again, almost impossible to predict who actually ends up going. I'm just trying to look up, I'm trying to discover what I think would be the biggest casualty.
It's Sassuolo. It's Sassuolo by a mile.
I just wanted to check, but I'm basically looking at their league positions from the last few years to just like,
Sass were in Europe, like not very long ago.
Yeah, but then I thought last season they had a good year, but they finished 13th last season. So they actually didn't do as well as I thought they did.
For a long time, Sassuolo have been the Robin Hood of Serie A, right? They've taken points from the rich and given points to the poor. And that's why they always end up in mid-table. But they, you know, this was a side that felt like they were going places, had a really, you know, well-regarded young manager, and it just all feels like it's gone up in smoke. And suddenly, from being in a place where at the start of the season, you were like, we, of course, Sassuolo beat Inter. Of course, they'll be the only team to beat Inter this season. This is what they do. They've completely collapsed. And they would be, I think, the biggest side in terms of where they've been in recent years to go. Udinese are a, you know, famous.
I was going to say, looking at the squads, I think it's Udinese. I think looking at the squad, Udinese should not even be in this
situation.
But
I do think Udinese will be fine.
Yeah.
Whereas I'm not completely convinced on anyone else. And that sounds mad because Lecce are above Udinese, but I think that they have the potential with that whole head loss thing about Verona to collapse themselves.
Yeah.
It's just like Cagliari finally found some form and you're like, you know, it looks difficult this last bit, but they're the team that you'd imagine now that you go, right, okay, you've got Ranieri's an old hat at this kind of relegation escape business.
Yeah.
Can he lift them out of this? You know, there was a point earlier in the season, we talked about it, right? They were 3-0 down with 12 minutes to go. And I was like, if they lose this game, he's going to go. This is back in November. They scored 4 goals in the last 12 minutes of it and won the game. Ranieri kept his job and off they went. And it was like, okay, cool. Right. So they're still amongst it and their squad isn't great. But I think that there is a sense that Cagliari are going to drag themselves out of it. The rest of it, I have no idea. Like on paper, Sassuolo should be so much better than they are. Yes, they sold a lot of big players, right? There was some really big names that left them and they have struggled to replace those. But in terms of still looking at this squad and where they were last year, they should be nowhere near this. And so part of me thinks, you know, to use an old Samism, the team with the better players usually wins the most games. It's just not been the case over the course of this season. Yeah. So it's hard to kind of believe in that in this particular instance.
Yeah, very good, mate. I'm guessing the next one is one that's very close to your heart.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about the Portuguese title race. I'm going to do it quietly and quickly because there's not all that much to it, but I think it's still,
well, there is a lot to it, mate. This is an in-the-bag call. Yes. That's what's resting on
100%,
this.
100%. And look, I still believe that Sporting are going to win it. But to kind of give you the context, just 1 point separates cross-sea Lisbon rivals Benfica and Sporting, right? With 8 or so games left in the Portuguese top flight, Sporting have the 1 point advantage and they also have a game in hand. But there's a couple of really important games still to play. And this all hinges on like one big week. And I think this is cool because Benfica and Sporting meet twice in a week at the start of April. First in the cup at Benfica's Estádio da Luz for a second leg where Sporting hold a 2-1 advantage from the first. And then a couple of days later in the league at Sporting's ground, the José Avalanche, where a win I think would probably seal the deal. But Sporting still have to travel to Porto and the Estádio Dragão at the end of April, which is obviously a stadium where Benfica were just hammered 5-0 in what felt like one of the biggest results of the season so far. Now, it's going to hurt Benfiquistas to be supporting Porto in a game, but they're going to have to, right? They're going to be hoping that Porto can do a similar job on the green and white half of Lisbon, even if they have to do it through gritted teeth. But the same weekend, and you know, to kind of, without counting chickens, etc., Benfica host fourth place Braga. So we'll have first versus third and second versus fourth, which is a cool spot to be in, I think, at this point. Porto are 6 points behind Benfica and 7 behind Sporting. I think their race is probably run in terms of winning the title. But Braga are 5 points behind them and will be looking to hunt them down for another Champions League spot. They obviously came third in the league last year and that got them into the Champions League and it was all very exciting. But Braga's biggest rivals, Vitória, or Vitória Guimarães, as they're sometimes known, will be looking to hunt Braga down. They're just 3 points behind them and that fourth spot on their hunt for Europa League action at the very least. So there's a lot to play for still here. And I think that that week where Benfica and Sporting play each other twice, Lisbon might be the best place to be on a football sense in the planet.
Well, Lisbon's usually one of the best places to be on the planet anyway. So yeah, it definitely is going to be one of the best places in the world to be. Yeah, it's brilliant that you've got a week like that in the calendar. This is exciting. I'd like to believe that people are sat here with a pad and a pen jotting down the dates that they're not allowed out in the coming couple of months because they've got to sit and just watch these key football dates. Maybe we should reintroduce a newsletter at Ranks FC just so everybody knows. It's like a schedule, you know, like so when your kid goes to school, get the newsletter through at the start. It's online now, obviously. But it's all like dates to remember. And it's just like when the Easter holidays are, when
Christmas
the Inter days are, when Christmas play is, when the parents' evening is. We need the Jack Collins version of that.
Yeah, maybe. Well, I'll tell you what, that Sporting Porto game is another one on that weekend of April 28th.
Mate, that's insane.
It might be going down as the greatest weekend of football ever.
It could be.
Could be. Could be. You never know. But all very, very exciting. But yeah, that's me, Dan. I didn't have all that much to say, but I do think that type is really exciting. And the fact that it's, you know, Sporting and Benfica, as opposed to, you know, we've seen Porto right in this mix the last couple of years. And we've seen Benfica obviously take it off Porto last year. We've seen, you know, Sporting re-enter the conversation, but their last kind of big title race felt like it was against Porto. So for it to be the kind of two sides of Lisbon, that's cool. I'm excited. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, it's very cool indeed. I'll finish this off with the Championship. I thought about doing the Premier League, like the European spots. Nah, leave that. Premier League relegation. It is massive, especially this week, because Nottingham Forest have been docked points. So there's definitely something to be said about that final relegation spot in the Premier League. But I thought, do you know what? I think I'm more interested in who comes up to the Premier League rather than who we actually lose from it. So if you have not been keeping an eye on the Championship, it is time for you to do so.
I'm sad. I'm sad you haven't picked the relegation battle, because I think it's maybe the most like exciting thing.
I wanted to go Serie A instead
because I wanted to talk about one of the top five European leagues. But I mean, this is a joke.
It is, yeah. Like, what's going on at the bottom of the Championship is mad, and I advise you all to go and have a look. I just felt that in terms of how important it is news-wise and how appropriate it is to our audience, most people don't care who ends up in League One. Bearing in mind, especially, we have an audience that is global, not just based in like Huddersfield. So let's bear that in mind.
Shout out to all our Huddersfield listeners, though.
Absolutely. Anyway, at the top of the Championship, there are four teams that can go up automatically. There are two automatic spots. Leeds United are in first place on 82 points. Leicester are second, also on 82 points, but with the game in hand. Ipswich are third on 81 points, so they're one behind those two. And Southampton, currently fourth on 73 points. So it sounds like they're quite far back, but Saints do have two games in hand on Leeds at the top. The last game was called off when there was that fire next to the stadium that a lot of you probably saw images of. Now, interestingly here, Leeds don't face any of their automatic promotion contenders until they host Southampton at Elland Road on the last day of the season. So that is their most difficult game on the final day. Before then, they've got Hull at home and Coventry away, which are
Hull
kind of
scrapping.
Tricky.
Yeah, they're both scrapping for that last
both
spot in
trying
the playoffs.
To get playoffs.
Yeah.
So that is interesting, but Leeds are looking good to bounce straight back. They've been on a very good run under Daniel Farke. Second spot, Leicester City. It did look as though they were going to absolutely romp home. They were champions elect. They were going to smash Reading's points record of 106 points in a single championship season. But they've got some proving to do if they're going to get over the line here. They've still got to play Norwich, who are sixth. They've still got to play West Brom, who are fifth. They've still got to play Southampton, who are fourth. And they've still got to play Preston, who are pretty good too. So Leicester have got a lot of work to do if they are going to clinch that other spot.
Yeah, I mean, if they win that game in hand, they go 3 points clear of Leeds at the top, right? And, you know, normally you'd say, well, that's a given. But actually, considering they've lost three, drawn one, and only won one of their last five games, it doesn't look like a given anymore. They're really
having a bit of a...
Well, they did give Chelsea a good game at the weekend until they went down to 10.
Yeah, but three straight defeats really did... go against them, funny enough. Ipswich were only promoted from League One last year, and they were set off storming. They were setting the pace at one point, but predictably, I guess, they had a bit of a tough time over a couple of months, December, January, Feb, but they've come again. They've come through it. Smashed Sheffield Wednesday 6-0, and they'll fancy that they could still give this a go. They've got Southampton at home to come. They've got Norwich away, they've got Coventry away, and they've got Hull away. So it's not easy by any stretch of the imagination, especially they got three of aways there against teams that are in the top eight.
In the mix.
So that's a tough one. But then in fourth spot, Southampton, they were my favourites. Two months ago, I reckon, to go up. Russell Martin led them on an unbelievable unbeaten league run, 22 games. If you extend that to all competitions, 25.
The championship, mate, and only elite teams go on 23 game runs, unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, we remember that season when Fulham were going unbeaten. And the feeling that you get in those moments, you just do feel unstoppable, don't you?
And, well,
you know, obviously we went on and done it, but they've had a proper stumble.
We went on via the playoffs, so it's not the end of the world for the old Saints.
That's true. That's true. We did. But Saints, yeah, they lost three of four games, and then they went to Birmingham, scored a 96th-minute winner. They beat Sunderland the other day. They have the hardest run in. They have to play all of the top three, and all three of those matches are away from home.
Ooh.
That is very difficult. And they actually also have to play Coventry, Preston. So they've also got a couple of other tough games in there too. Southampton, I'll be honest, are really up against it now. And Russell Martin, I do really admire. I do think he's a good coach, to be fair. And I think that they've got a good one there. But it's looking like Saints. Maybe they like it. Maybe it's good to be the underdogs in a situation like that. It's nice to chase.
It is also one, good to chase. And two, the other thing is, I suppose, that they have it in their own right. If they can turn all those teams over, they know they will catch one of them at the very least, right? That's the kind of flip.
That's it, yeah. That's it. Absolutely, you're right. And it's the championship. Anything can happen. And if you've watched some mad Southampton games this season already, like they've been involved in some ridiculous matches. So yeah, there's all to play for here. As I say, I do think Leeds, probably my personal favourites to actually go on and win the league, and are probably most likely out of these four to be automatically promoted. But it's anyone's guess, mate. This is going to be a cracking interseason.
Yeah, 100%. But also, you know, add to that, and obviously we're not talking about the relegation battle, but there's eight teams down there fighting for their lives and well within reach of each other at the minimum, right? So with that in mind, all of those teams are going to look at every game and be like, it doesn't matter who we're playing, we've got to try and get
that's
something
that's it. Even the games that look easy on paper, they're fighting for their life, so it's actually not.
There's maybe four teams in the championship with nothing really to play for. This is an incredibly difficult division. And I think that added pressure just ratchets up towards the end of it. It's going to be very exciting. I can't wait to see how it pans out. And with that, I think it's probably time for us to end this second segment. We'll be back after the break to help a new rank squad member out with picking a football club. Don't go anywhere.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Welcome back to Ranks FC. Well, we've got one more little segment for you. And those of you who listened last week will remember that we had Ellis on the show. Ellis came on to talk about him looking for a Premier League club. And as we sort of went around it, we ended up talking about Tottenham. And we also suggested that he might want to come and follow our beloved Fulham a little bit as well. Turns out that Ellis was in Oxford. That's where he's been staying. So he said there wasn't that many clubs near him. We were kind of a bit worried about where he was.
Yeah, he didn't tell us, did he? Yeah.
No. So I said we made some London-based suggestions. So Ellis said this. He said, just listen to the episode. Thanks for helping me choose a team. I know this sounds ridiculous, but I've already got tickets to go see Fulham play Spurs this Saturday with my cousins.
Wild.
I was already thinking about Fulham. And I love Tim Ream and Anthony Robinson, but hopefully this will make my experience more enjoyable. And if I see you, I'll give you a shout. I said, amazing. Well, you can enjoy. And the winner of it, you can have as a club. So Ellis has done.
No way. He came and the game, we beat him 3-0. Oh, my days. That's brilliant. Yeah. I can actually turn the tables on that, because when I was at college, me and all my mates, we all supported different teams. And, you know, when you're like 17, 18, you've learnt to drive and you're a bit bored of not much to do. And so we decided we were going to pick a football team to support and all go and watch this team. And so we got a map, we closed our eyes, spun someone around, he picked a place, Oxford. We ended up supporting Oxford United. We went to their next game, which turned out to be against Reading, which was their big rival.
Yeah, yeah, the Thames Valley
massive
derby.
Rivalry. It was a cup match, right? It was madness, right? It was like helicopters going over the ground. There was like they properly hate each other. We're behind the goal singing Oxford Till I Die. It was unbelievable. We never went to another game. We still consider ourselves Oxford fans, and we had a great time.
Fantastic. Moments you love to see. It's great stuff. So you've brought one back from Oxford now as well. It's 1-1. All right, let's get on to this week, shall we? Boys, what do you got?
Guru wisdom.
Thank you, lads, as ever. This one comes from Twitter. And we do actually have one next week, which is an international version of this. So Valdemar's going to be on next week. But before we get to that, I wanted to keep that one till after the international break, or at least during its kind of second week. This one is from someone on Twitter called Am Israel Chai Taco, which I'm going to believe is not his real name. And his handle doesn't give us much clue either, because that's Buenos Dias 99, right? So right, he says, hey, Jack, the segment on picking teams had me thinking it might be officially time to pick teams from the remaining leagues I don't have one from. I'm an Argentinian residing in Miami, and I grew up on Boca Juniors and Barcelona. Now with Inter Miami around the list is officially three of teams I support. As far as the other top five leagues, I usually just rooted for the teams that had either Argentinian or US stars. City for Aguero, Inter with Milito and Zanetti, Chelsea with Pulisic, etc. Now I feel like I want to nail down teams I would root for, at least domestically, as Barcelona will always be my first love in Europe. From the Boca and Barca profiles, I like the people's teams with history. I love teams that have a deep connection with their fans and that develop youth over buying stars. Yes, both Barca and Boca have bought stars, but their fundamental values are rooted in the homegrown talent, unlike the Millonarios of River or the Galacticos of Real. A rowdy fan base would help my decision. Based on all of these things, my first indication would be Dortmund and Inter Milan. But as far as Premier League or League One, I'm not quite sure who best fits this mold. It would be awesome to hear some suggestions. And also, if you agree with my inclinations on Germany and Italy. I think Germany feels about right. It feels like a natural gap there.
Yeah.
I think that's an easy in. Inter feels, you know, obviously it's a slightly different kind of relationship.
I don't like that one.
I don't either, but I think he's already kind of put in there that he had this affiliation, Milito and Zanetti, and therefore I can kind of buy that. That's just one of those that's been sitting in the back of his head a little bit more.
What about Lautaro?
Yeah, that'll help too.
That'll help.
I mean, I think this is the, I think it's the underlying current there. So I think to try and sway the underlying current, you have to have a better suggestion, and I don't. So.
No,
I'm going to leave them. But I do think that trying to find a Premier League club and a Ligue 1 club as well. Now, I think the answer in Ligue 1 is Lyon. Maybe the best talent factory in France. The amount of players that come through at Lyon and make it into the first team, they're not often used to their full advantage. So that might just be because Lyon are just a bit mad and Aulas is a bit of a madman at the best of times. But that feels like the natural place I would go with these clubs is to go in and say Lyon as well. But in the Premier League, I'm a wee bit stumped. Part of me thinks the answer is Liverpool.
God, these are all big clubs he's going to be supporting.
Yeah, I do appreciate that. But also,
well, some people like that.
Boca and Barca, we're talking about big clubs to begin with. You're talking about this Inter Miami side that are now knocking about.
Well, Pochettino is the manager of Chelsea. So there's a link.
Yeah. And they do have an incredible academy, but they they do also spend shed loads of money. And he did make a point of saying that wasn't one of his vibes.
Yeah, but he's missed that. They're never going to spend as much money as that ever again. No one can ever spend £1 billion in 1 year again.
You were going to suggest that one club in England had basically gone down the route of going Millonarios of River or Galacticos of Real. The answer is Chelsea. So therefore, I think that you have to take that one out of there. And then my kind of natural instinct is to say Liverpool. Now, obviously, there is a current real injection of youth that's going on, and that hasn't always been the case. And I think that you could look at something like Manchester United's run of producing homegrown talent and having an academy graduate in the squad that's lasted such a long time and discuss them and push them into it. But I don't know, part of my head feels like Liverpool are more akin to these other clubs than a Manchester United.
No, you are right. Yeah, I mean, I don't like recommending Liverpool as a club to support because it's not something I've ever done in my life. But then again, I've just recommended someone support Chelsea. So I guess
I was going to say, you have no legs to stand on anymore.
Oh, yeah, so that doesn't count for anything. In fitting with the other teams that he's supporting, yes. I mean, we've just said Dortmund. Liverpool and Dortmund kind of go hand in hand. You'll never walk alone and all that.
Yeah, it feels like a fitting gap. So That's where we'll go. We'll agree with your
inclination.
He's got
some good games through the years if he gets to see all these clubs.
Yeah, these ones. It's going to be trophies galore with most. You're going to have a great time.
Some people just go for quirky clubs. He's just like, exactly. Want to win the lot, mate. I want to win it all.
Give me all of it. Give me all of it.
Fair play. That's, you know, you watch football to win, right? Like, we should have probably picked more smartly.
Yeah, honestly, I got sent something from a friend of mine the other day, and it was just like someone naming clubs. He was like, this is you and all the clubs you support. And I was like, yeah, but the problem is that when someone normally does that, you're talking about someone who's like, oh, I just need something. I was like, mine's just an exercise in self-flagellation. It's like, how many clubs can bring me pain in a certain year? It's on and on and on we go. But it does feel like that. But, you know, that's it. Some of us like pain. This guy loves trophies.
He's gonna joy and glory, time. Yeah.
Going to have an absolutely wonderful time. So fair play. I think that's a good one. I'm excited about next week's one from Valdemar. It's a bit different. And it's going to take some work, but
I'll switch my brain on for next week.
Absolutely. And with that, mate, I think it's probably time for us to call it a day. So what's left for me to do is to say thank you very much to my co-host, Mr. Dean Jones.
Cheers, mate.
I've been Jack Collins. This has been Ranks FC. Thank you so much for listening as ever. Enjoy the international break, whether you're watching every game like I am or none of them like Dean, whatever you decide to do with these next couple of weeks before we get that explosion towards the end of club football again. I hope that you make the very, very most of it. For now, though, take it easy, guys. Peace.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.